it's time for another exciting episode of Web Comics Weekly.
All right.
Quick intro of the panel so that we can get down to brass tacks. It's the Christmas weekend's coming up, and we want to get in and out fast so that we can enjoy our families and not... We don't really like webcomics. That's the big secret of this podcast. In L.A., and where it probably doesn't feel very much weather-wise like Christmas, is Dave Kellett of SheldonComics.com.
Hello, everyone, and it's a brisk, cold 65 degrees here in Southern California.
Grunting jealously from the frigid tundra of Philadelphia is Brad Wigwam Geiger of Evil-Comic.com.
Molly McButter.
What?
And then sitting here in Half Pixel Central Studios is Chris Straub of Starslip.com and me, Scott Kurtz, of PvPOnline.com. What's up, Chris?
Mrs. Dash.
It's not nice to mess with Mother Nature.
Dave, you don't remember Molly McButter?
I do, but I don't remember the song being sung that bad.
Molly McButter.
Yikes.
Come on.
I just walked
into
that.
Come on.
Oh, come on.
Oh, come on. So,
how's everybody this week?
It's awesome. I'm great.
It's been a good week.
I'm ready to rest.
Do it.
Are we just happy because the book's almost done?
I think
oh,
so.
Oh, my God, yes.
We're friends again.
Hey! I missed you guys. The really sad thing is, and this is a testament to how bad I am getting my stuff into Image, when I told them, yeah, we'll have that book turned in like this week, their response was, wow, really?
And now, of course, you're like, all right,
okay,
the hell with it.
Fine.
I'm not doing
Maybe
it then.
Next week.
We shouldn't have rushed it.
Forget it.
Listen, the Half Pixel guys and I are going down to Cancun. We'll get it to you in late spring.
Really?
Man, I wish the Half Pixel guys were going to Cancun.
Late spring, huh?
Although, is there much for a fat man to do in Cancun? I don't think so.
Cannonball.
There's always the strawberry margaritas. I'm a big fan.
I've been hired to make people feel thinner in Cancun.
All right, Mr. Kitts, take off your shirt and stand by that cabana.
There's always
my enjoyment is heightened. Because I'm
my
not
My enjoyment is heightened?
My enjoyment is heightened because I'm not that fat man.
Oh, it's a monocle.
Yes. Listen, Kurtz, we read your blog post. We're here down 150 pounds. What the hell are you thinking? Do you want a future here with cabana tours? All right.
You're our Hurley. You have got to keep the weight on.
You're our Hurley? So that's my question about that guy. Is that guy contractually obligated to keep that weight up?
He might be.
I would think that it would work either way.
You think they could write it in if he does and write it? But I'm wondering, like, because how awkward is that conversation from producer to actor? Hey, listen,
Look, we keep writing it so that it's only been that you guys have been on the island for 3 months for 3 years, pal.
I always wonder about that when I see a particularly unattractive person for whatever reason, maybe it's the unibrow or whatever, and they're brought in for a TV show, and you think about like Dave said, what was that conversation with the producers? Did this actress or this actor walk in and they say, yep, you're ugly enough?
Well, yeah. Or what was the casting call? Like, what's the listing? It says needed.
There used to be.
You know what? Chris, you laugh, but I have actor friends that literally they are now solidly in the ugly guy role, or in the character actor, as they call it, role.
Yeah, character actor.
Yeah, Dave has friends that are in that role.
There used to be a talent agency located here in Dallas. And their big radio push ads were, think you need to be Brad Pitt to be a Hollywood actor? No, there are ugly people in Hollywood. Think of Roseanne Barr and Danny DeVito. That was in their radio commercial.
Really?
Yes.
Wow.
And then there's an actor who's really handsome. He goes, I wish I was ugly. And he's behind the wheel of a car, and he is flooring it into a brick wall.
And then he comes out. One guy's gaining weight. I'm gaining weight so I can be the fat buddy next door. All right.
He's just sitting at Krispy Kreme.
Usually it takes us about 10-20 minutes to get into a rat hole, but today, man, we're just barreling right through.
Anyway, Webcomics Weekly, let's thank our panel for being here tonight.
bringing you our patented Japanese efficiency for falling into rebels.
What I'm trying to say is acting is a lot like webcomics, which leads us to our first question from the mailbag.
Johnny Transition.
Johnny Transition.
Yeah, you want to do one from the mailbag?
Go ahead.
Yes.
This one's written in to us by a young fellow by the name of Peter Tarkulich.
Fake name.
And he does a comic called Bardsworth, BardsWorth.com. And he says, hey, guys, I'm currently in the process of putting together my first print collection of strips. And although I'm probably several months from being finished, I can't help but thinking of marketing and promotion already. Smart man. I've been – that was my editorial cartoon. He didn't actually write that about himself.
I'm a smart man. I'm a smart man.
Mommy says I'm a very good driver. I've been to a couple of Dave's book release parties, and I'm always impressed at how professionally done they are. And Dave, this is something I've been wanting to ask you, too. The question is, how do you put together a book release party? How do you do that, Dave?
Ah, okay.
Step one, marry someone in Hollywood.
Yes.
Preferably one of the people who are not in the ugly actor role.
Yes. The step exactly. two, enjoy your book party.
Step three, hire a guy to stand by you in the cabana down in Cancun.
Hey, Scott, less moping, more dripping ice cream down that gut of yours. Go.
All right, so book release parties. So here is the magic secret that a producer friend of mine introduced me to about life. And that is that the secret to getting things in life is to just straight out asking for them politely, firmly, giving reasons why someone should give it to you. And you would be surprised, that how big the rejection rate will be, but B, that there are people that will say yes. And so with a book party, the two or three things that you need are yourself. You can provide that for free. You need a space, and you need free drinks. And the free drinks are food. And the reason why you need the free drinks or food is there's all sorts of readers of yours who would love to meet you, love to buy from you, love to get you to sign a book. But the addition of a free drink or a free appetizer or something like that is just that extra little incentive that I found to get people out to a book party. And then the other thing, of course, is the space. You don't want to have to pay for the bar, or the restaurant, or the meeting hall that you're going for. I mean, the idea being that you want it to be absolute minimum cost for you. Ideally, no cost to you to throw this book party. So how do you do that? Well, no matter how big or small the town is – actually, you know what? I will amend that. If you're in a middle to big-sized town, you're going to do better at this, and here's why. Because there's such competition for restaurant space in a big city that there's every restaurant or bar has a night during the week when they're slow. So let's say Jimmy's Bar cranking all during the week, but Monday nights they're immensely slow, or Sunday nights they're immensely slow. So you ask and you throw your book party on that night, and they'll give you the space, knowing that of the 100 or 200 or 300 people that you'll bring in for your book party, even if they only get 10% of those people to end up ordering an appetizer or an entree or a Long Island iced tea that they weren't going to buy, it's bringing in money for their bar on an otherwise slow night. So that's step one. And then step two is – am I putting you guys to sleep? I should
nope,
check in.
Nope.
Okay. So step two is how do you get drinks, and how do you get appetizers, and how do you get all that sort of stuff? Appetizers, I'll be honest, I've never been able to swing. I've approached a lot of local catering companies. I've approached the restaurants and bars that I'm having the place in, and so far I've had no luck. Food is a pretty high-priced item. And the margins on and markups on food are not high enough where they'll be like, yeah, we'll give away X percentage to you for free. Alcohol, however, is a different story. There's such a big margin on alcohol. If you've ever looked at the cost per bottle of to the producer or to even to a distributor of wine or vodka versus what they end up charging you at a store, the markup is immense. It's almost like jewelry type markups. So what you got to do, and this is key, is find distributors and or drink promoters in your town that are looking for marketing events to promote their new alcohol. So you'll never get a Smirnoff, you'll never get a Johnny Walker Red, but you will get some weird vodka called like Puppy Dog Kisses, the new vodka from the people that brought you Puppy Dog Shoes. And you'll be like, what? Who's marketing this? And they will sponsor your night, usually with a half case or a case of vodka or something like that. And you can make all sorts of mixed drinks. You could either do it with an agreement from the bar to mix well drinks and the free alcohol that you got, or you can get sort of side liquids that you paid
What's
for.
Funny.
For example,
I'm a cartoonist, and in my head popped this barley farts. A new microbrewery by Schlitz is proud to promote Bardsworth.
I just like that it's barley farts. That's great.
Barley farts. This will really. We're trying to market the college dorm kids.
Well, I'm trying to think of the different stupidly named drinks that I've had at various parties. One, okay, I had Pink Vodka was the last one, because we all know that's a huge brand, Pink Vodka. And the big selling point of that vodka, it was guarnine infused. So talk about a useless. A great drink. Talk about a great drink that everyone should run out and buy.
But when they sponsor it, what are they sponsoring? Like, they're just providing
they're
free drinks?
By giving you a couple hundred dollars to, probably a couple hundred dollars worth of at cost liquor to you for free.
Oh, okay, okay.
And then you work it out with the bar that you just you bring those cases in and you tell the bartender that they're supposed to use that vodka to mix the drinks.
Yes, and what I tend to do is, like, let's say I get Pink Vodka to sponsor with alcohol, and then I'll get like Smart Water to sponsor for soft water based drinks. You know, those kind of fruity drinks that Smart Water makes, vitamin water, that sort of thing.
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm. So they'll make mixed drinks with that, and then the deal that I tend to do with the bar is, if there's any hard liquor left over, they can get it. They can have it, because what that does is that saves the bar on future well or mixed drinks that they're going to have to make. You know.
What's a well drink?
A well drink is anything. I haven't worked in a bar.
I don't even know what it is.
A well drink, I think, is just anything made from the well. You know, that front area. The various cheaper, low name brand drinks at the front, plus, you know, maybe a spritz of Coke, some ice cubes, and a cherry.
Sour mix, that sort of thing.
Yeah. And I think the high end stuff is on the back. I think that's the difference between a well drink and a. I'm sure there's a drinker somewhere amongst our audience that'll correct me on that. But
next week,
hey, listen,
beep.
You don't
listen.
Yeah, that's the phone call we get. You gotta stop telling well drinks.
You guys at the Web Comic Weekly.
Either that, or they're gonna call in and say, "Hey, thanks for the tip. That was beautiful."
Apparently, we'll be getting calls from the stork from the old Warner Brothers cartoons. That's a big baby.
Oh, I'm going to deliver you to the gorillas.
now we're going to find out on the boards that wasn't actually Warner Brothers, but it was a live actor on Sesame Street.
Right. How dare you?
13 pink infused well drinks. Wow. Hey, listen.
Anyway, go ahead, Scott.
Oh, jeez. I hate listening back to these because, you know, when you never notice a car on the road, and then you're thinking about buying one, and they're everywhere. You notice them all the time.
Yeah.
I know that no one else notices it, but because I'm me, I only hear my own voice on the podcast. So all I hear is this: guys talking, intelligent conversation, guys talking, intelligent conversation. Important point. Laughter. You know what I think. Oh, I hate it.
That's why people like podcasts.
That's right. Oh, I thought magic. Dave was done because I was going to add something to the end of this before we started a new question, but continue, Dave.
No. Please, my point is essentially done, so please go ahead.
Well, since this was about self-promotion, I'm going to segue it into something I read that I wanted to bring up during the show about self-promotion. Steve Martin was on Charlie Rose last week.
Cool.
And talking about his autobiography, and at the very end, he gave his advice to someone who's trying to make it in any field, and that advice is be undeniably good. And Steve Martin's quote is, "When people ask me how to make it in show business or whatever, what I always tell them, and nobody ever takes note of it because it's not the answer they want to hear. What they want to hear is how you get an agent. Here's how you write a script. Here's how you do this. But I always say, be so good they can't ignore you. If somebody's thinking, how can I be really good? People are going to come to you. It's much easier doing it that way than going to cocktail parties. So be undeniably good. I think that's a good motto to keep.
I think I must have mentioned it last time, but I felt like that piece of advice was like, but how do you tell somebody to just do better? But you can. You have to.
Yeah.
Yeah, you just got to be better.
Don't you think, though, guys, that too many people want success that first year out? And it's like, no, you don't deserve it yet.
Yeah.
That's true.
And then to follow up on that, I don't know who Seth Godin is, but the blog I found this information from said that Seth Godin followed up on the same post, and he says, self-promotion, as the term is used by many people, is a mildly pejorative way to describe someone who promotes himself at the expense of others. Nobody says, that Yo-Yo Ma, he's so self-promotional, or can you believe what a self-promoter the Dalai Lama is? And that's because they're not promoting themselves. They're promoting useful ideas. They're promoting tactics or products that actually benefit the person they're reaching out to. So that was something else I thought, I'm going to take all that and apply it to my webcomic.
That's good.
Yeah.
Coming back to the book party just for a second, Dave, how scared were you the first time you did that, that nobody was going to show up?
Oh, you know what? I'm scared every time that no one's going to show up.
Really?
On some level. But then I think to myself, well, worst case scenario, I have a case of free vodka.
Jeez.
Then you tell the bar, you remember that deal where I was going to let you have the overflow? No.
No. And it's just me at the end of the bar sitting on a couch going, I was going to have people here tonight, but I didn't want to show up, so I'm having...
You're just saying, I'm having my book party. I don't care. Nobody comes. I'm here.
No, even worse, Chris, it's just me sitting behind a huge stack of books just signing away.
But how sad would that be if you walk in on some book party that failed and it's just the creator in the back going, I don't care. Boo, I'm just going to draw my comic. Look at me. I'm Scott Good. Blah, blah, fart joke. Oh, everyone come to my book party.
But I have noticed, Brad, though, that the more I throw these, the bigger they get, if that makes sense. Like over the last 3 years. Yeah. Every time they're a little bit bigger. And this time I had people drive as far away as mid-California to come down to L.A., which I don't know. That's, what, 2 hours away?
Yikes.
3 hours away?
It's an investment.
Yeah,
see,
I was impressed by that.
I'd have no problem calling the bar. I'd have no problem calling the distributor. I'd have no problem doing any of that. But leaving the house that night to show up to what might be an empty event would just terrify me. Do you ask for RSVPs? Do you ask if people are coming, or is it completely blind?
No, it's completely blind. You know what I should have done? I should have done like an Evite or something that first time just to assuage my nervousness.
Brad, are you trying to talk him out of the next one?
I know.
No. I'm trying to find out what his approach was to leaving the house that night. That's, I mean, all that other stuff I can do, but holy cats, that would really frighten me.
You know what, Brad? You just got to believe that the magic is inside you.
You just gotta
go out every day and put one foot in.
Brad, you didn't need that book party. You're a great cartoonist already.
Brad, you're one of the most talented guys I know. You don't need 100 people in a room drinking around you to tell you that. No, listen, I can, Brad, trust me, I'm not minimizing that. I understand the fear of coordinating all this free stuff and then nobody showing up. That would be terrifying. So my advice would be do an Evite or do a forum post in your forum that just says, hey, who's coming, and get a ring on it. And then if you're really worried about it, pack it out with all your friends in Philadelphia who you'll end up selling a book to anyway, but you might as well have them all there one night, you know?
Yeah, that's a good
Brad point. Throws it and doesn't show up because he's too nervous, and then it just cuts to George Lucas, and they're going, I really wanted to buy this evil comic for a movie. Oh, well, I don't know why I'm Kermit the Frog, but I'm George Lucas.
It ain't easy having a turkey gobbler.
Yeah, he's got like a goiter.
No, have Why you ever seen are there so many plot holes in my movies?
It seems like I've forgotten how to write a hero's journey.
The Force used to be about mysticism and belief.
Power myth.
Now it's about bacteria.
I've fallen off the wagon. I can't write a movie no more.
Somebody stop me.
Getting THQ 2001 or whatever.
Somebody stop me before I move to TV.
He is
moving to TV.
Well, somebody bring it home.
Okay.
All right. So here's the summarizing thought about book parties is that you also have to be honest about how big a crowd you can garner, because you don't want to burn the bar and be like, hey, I brought five people in for you tonight. So if you're just starting out and your readership is 100 people or 1,000 people, now it's not the time to do a book party. But as you get bigger, it's definitely something to consider. And don't let fear of doing it stop you from trying it once, because I'm sure 90% of our audience could coordinate one.
And here's my final thought. Don't bother. It's not going to work out.
Don't do it, Brad.
Stay home.
It's going
like, to... I mean, honestly, you can rent a movie.
Put that pen down. You can rent it.
Look, I can drink anywhere. I don't have to be at a party or at a bar. Usually I'm at work.
The Church of Scientology. All right. I just love making Brad laugh. It's so easy.
Well, hey, why don't we go to the phones?
Let's do it.
Yeah, and if you'd like to leave a message on our Webcomics Weekly hotline, it's 214-717-5487. So
that
write this
easy.
Down. Yeah, all you got to do, pick up your phone, your little future phone, and dial 214-717-5487 and leave your message, question, tip, or comment. And here is... one of the three we got. So come on. Let's get some more people. All right. This is, here we go. Question.
Hi, guys. Thea here. So what's the deal with all of these unreadable webcomics? Either the panels are so big they break the page, or it's formatted vertically so you have to scroll, but there's all this empty space on the sides, or you can't find the next button, or worst of all, the text is tiny and totally illegible. I know that web cartoons aren't necessarily web designers, but can you go over some basics of how to draw for the web? What resolution should one design for? What's the difference between laying out for the screen versus the page? How big is too big? How small is too small? And for God's sake, what makes a readable font? Thanks, fellas.
Well, that's good. Thanks for the spontaneous, unrehearsed question.
You maintain she was reading that, don't you?
Completely.
During the pre-show, you were making little "I'm reading this" gestures as we played that.
Dear Chris, I think that you are overstating that.
Hi, guys. Why do so many webcomics suck? Well, Thea, we can't answer that question because God loves our sadness, and
He wants us to be upset when we read them.
Can I tell you, though, that in contrast to making fun of her for preparing and reading a question, we should thank her for being one of the few people that had a cogent thought and said it well.
Oh, I wasn't making fun.
No. Yes. I think I actually know Thea, to be honest.
I think so, too.
Yeah, she's the one from My World of
Warcraft.
Yeah.
I remember her.
Yeah.
See, we're not
We met her in Anaheim.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
She is married to the guy that looks just like Savage from MythBusters.
Oh, that's
Remember?
Right. Yeah.
Because every time we come in the room, we'd say, "You like eating breakfast?" Myth confirmed. You know.
What is it? The law of averages. Well, that's why comics are bad.
No, well, really she was asking a lot about the formatting. To be honest,
it's a good question.
It is a good question.
Where should we start? About how big is too big?
I think the thing about it is that in her question, she pretty much lays it out what you should do. I mean, you should not have any vertical scrolling, you should not have any horizontal scrolling.
Yes.
Someone just got back from a book party.
No, the wife
nailed the joke.
God, the wife just came up and refilled my wine glass here, so I've got a cop to that one.
Brad, you've got nothing to be nervous about.
Doing a podcast, Brad's got a glass of wine going. That's awesome.
That's become a tradition over here.
I imagine the slippers, the fire, the bloodhound by his feet.
and a white Glock with a mother of pearl handle.
Pearl handle.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Askew across some papers.
What is that image? That's hilarious.
Because that makes it, it makes it from being I'm just a cozy guy from Philadelphia, you know, enjoying a glass of wine in the evening before I retire, to I'm up to nefarious deeds.
He's just slowly turning the white Glock over in his hands, just slowly turning it over in his hands, answering the question, swirling his wine around.
And then there's a big pile of blow on the other edge of the desk. No, I'm just kidding. All right, that's Scarface. I'm sorry. That's a totally different... That was Scarface.
Wrong guy. No, my point is everything that she talked about, she nails what some of the biggest problems are. Navigation buttons that are too far away from the comic itself, that's a huge no-no. Horizontal scrolling is incredibly wrong. And you got to be honest with yourself about the legibility of the font, especially if you're doing digital lettering or even if you're doing hand lettering. You've got to be honest with yourself about what's readable. And if you need to open up that letter form a little bit, whether you're hand lettering or digital lettering, it might mean that you have to edit your words more carefully. But in the long run, it's going to help you, mm-hmm. you know. And as far as resolution, there's only one resolution on the web. It's 72 DPI or 72 PPI. Any higher and you're not doing yourself any good. So that comic has got to be presented large enough in physical scale that 72 DPI can do what it's meant to do.
I agree.
Oh God, I thought you guys disconnected for a minute. I'm over here, my heart's beating.
Try not to laugh because
that's how I felt, Brad, when I was talking about the book party. You guys all went silent.
No. I'm trying not to laugh.
Oh God, I bored them to death.
As soon as Brad goes PPI, Chris and I immediately shoot a look at each other, and Chris made a.
I'm wiping my eyes.
He's
going,
making
oh,
an eye like,
oh.
I've got pee-pee in my eye. And I'm trying not to laugh through your little helpful hint. PPI. We're 6-year-olds. We're 6-year-olds.
DPI is dots per inch, and it is directly transferable to PPI, which is pixels per inch.
Oh, hold on a second. Someone's here. Hold on. Oh, guys, it's Scott McCloud. He wants to say something. Hold on. Here you go, Scott. What? Hey everyone, Scott McCloud. I would like to. I don't know why that's so funny, Brad, but I just wanted to make a little cheer, little statement for H Scroll Infinite Canvas. Everyone scrolling horizontally, not always bad. Just wanted to say that. Okay,
thanks,
that's enough,
thanks,
McCloud.
Scott.
Thanks, Scott.
It's always bad.
Pick up making comics.
Hey,
by.
Look, you
so,
can
just,
you can show
just as
following.
A quick roundhouse. How wide does everybody present their comics? I think I do mine 800 wide. How wide do you guys do it?
I'm 850.
I'm 900, beefy 900.
I'm the shortest of the four, I guess, in terms of comic size. That is, I do 700.
That is small.
Wait a minute, Chris. You're 900 wide. How wide is your site?
It's a little over, a sliver over 900.
Now I got to go to starslip.com, which is
PVPonline.com. Could I make mine 900?
You know what? 900. Oh, is that the new 800?
Hmm. No. I made it a little bigger just because I think most people who are reading my strip are at 1024 or above.
My site, I think, is at 900 wide. I couldn't do it. The highest I could go was like 890. I don't feel
well, here's
right.
Here's a tip, though, for everybody that is worried about what size to present it at, though. Just provided you have saved your strips in high resolution, as Brad is always recommending to people, you can always do a batch change on your web presented size and change it up or change it down to anything you'd like.
Play with it and test it.
Yeah.
And don't be – there's no set number here. It's whatever looks good.
I have my website set up so that the largest form across is 800 pixel. Am I going too small there?
Yes. Move it to 900, what? Brad.
900, you think?
Yes.
That would solve.
Your image is 756 pixels wide. That's interesting.
That's correct.
Mine's 850.
I mean, now I got 756.
How did you settle on 756? Was that just random rolls of dice?
It was an. It was like for some reason it was an easy number for me to remember.
What?
I don't know why. It,
what I do is I take
850
pixels,
and I just stuck with
subtract
it.
My waist size, then I add the number of years spent in Rhode Island.
What'd you say, Dave?
No, no, I was just saying your art is so beautiful that when you bring it up in size, that's going to be great for that.
Seriously.
Yeah, you know what? That might be worth the time that it would take to put into that. I might make that a project for mid-February.
Whoa. Don't go back and fix it. That's crazy talk. Just from now on, moving forward, make them bigger.
Well, yeah, I guess I could do that, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I'm like,
you're saying
Brad,
you would need to reorient your site size. Is that what you're saying?
I can redesign the site if I want to go 900 wide. That would open up a little bit of design possibilities for me. But I was thinking about going back and resizing all the old strips.
No.
But I'm like Brad, where I would feel uncomfortable that there was a split in my
and literally card. doing a folder batch change in Photoshop will take you 15 minutes. You test it out on five strips.
Oh,
and then
I guess so.
That's true. Yeah.
You just do a test batch of five strips
it's
in a folder.
Not
see if
rotten. I could go back and do that with some of my old strips too.
Sure.
You could have a batch
like
job that deleted them.
I'd like to buy the world a Coke.
In perfect harmony.
All right, let's go to the next question.
All right, I've got a question here from.
Wait a minute.
Oh, I'm sorry. Were we going to go to the phone?
Nope.
No. What happened?
Okay, because I was just going to say, I've got a question here from a Thea as well, and I was just wondering whether this was the same Thea. I didn't want to do two Theas in a row.
It could be.
Could be.
I Thea, that might be true. Well, that was terrible.
Well, there you go, theorizing again.
Better joke.
Well, let's do it anyway. Because
you guys suck, Thea.
And you know what? I don't think this was even spontaneously typed. I think she typed it out and then typed the email again.
it went through proofing.
It says, "Hey, guys, I'm curious about what you think about creating a webcomic that's more of a story than a strip. Perhaps this question would be better suited for when you have a guest. Well, too late for that. Regardless, I'm wondering what the first step is in writing a story if the most writers out there already know where they're going and they begin to put it on the web. So these are a couple of topics, and it's signed Thea. These are a couple of topics that we've talked about before, but I wanted – and this seems to come up every now and again in the emails that we get talking about the storyline-driven comic and how to make that work on the web. And so I wanted to come back today and revisit that a little bit for people who may have missed one of those earlier podcasts.
That's
right.
Good.
So essentially for longer form stories, and just to be frank, most of us are come out of a short form tradition,
although,
I would think.
Although lately, I don't know if I can claim that anymore.
Yeah, and Brad does long form stuff that goes on for a while.
That's true.
But I think, go ahead.
I was going to say, though, maybe it's better to say we all come out of a comic strip tradition in which it's less likely to find longer form stories than coming out of a graphic novel, zine or you know, comic book tradition.
Right.
So just as a caveat. But having said that, though, I think Brad had some excellent advice the last time we talked about this and about making it worthwhile for every installment. So, Brad, why don't you take it from there?
What I've always kind of told people when they've asked me this in person or in an email is that every day has to be a satisfying update. In other words, you have to have something there every day to satisfy the person that is coming to your site for the first time and convince them to make this a regular stop on their webcomics reading trawl, if you will. Every day has to be satisfying. And it doesn't mean that there's got to be a punchline every day. That does mean there has to be a climax every day. It just means that there's got to be something there, a plot point, a little bit of interest, a twist, a turn. But there's going to be something that makes reading that installment satisfying for the reader and entices them to, come back again tomorrow or to check the RSS feed. And I think another way that you can help your cause out is to run a blog with your comic in that case. And keep that cranking as much as you can with interesting and pertinent information. So that's my advice.
Well, my advice is buy our book because I address this in the book. Don't I?
You know, it is addressed. I know it's in there a couple times. I think I might have even written about it in there a little.
Where did I put it?
Are you looking for something?
Yeah, I'm looking for it.
Didn't
so
we talk about it before where long form, however often the update schedule is, that it still needs to provide the visitor with some punch that they can go, ah, that was satisfying. I'll
Here.
Come back next week.
Do you want me to read this very small paragraph that I wrote in the book about this?
Yeah, yeah.
Is everyone
just don't
cool
make
with that?
It sound like you're reading it.
Well, she read the question. Yeah. I hope this is the Thea that we know, so we're not offending some stranger. I know we're focusing a lot of this podcast, I'll replace word book, on humor writing. Well, we're funny guys, and I know that's our thing. But listen, in all honesty, writing for drama is not that much different from writing for humor. It's all about building tension and releasing the tension. With humor, you're building to a laugh. With drama, you're building to a dramatic reveal. What's important is that you learn the basics, pacing, delivery, and streamlining dialogue. Thank you. Thank you.
All right.
Buy the book, available in January.
God, that'd be a great book.
Let me play James Lipton for a minute.
What is your favorite sound? Anyway, there you go. Exclusive.
Not going to play along.
Exclusive.
There's probably some way to chart it, although I have no idea what the algorithm would be. But there's probably some way to chart it that if you're updating weekly for a long form storyline versus updating daily for a long form storyline, that weekly update has to be so amazing and powerful that it causes people to remember and want to remember that it will not be updating for another week.
Right. Well, that's
you know what I'm trying to
that's
say?
In the book too. Is that like look at any of your soap opera strips that are in the newspaper right now, like Apartment 3G or whatever,
Spider-Man or
nothing happens.
The
Every
reason
day,
why is because
happens.
Those guys developed a format for writing those back in the 50s, and they've never abandoned it.
Oh, I know.
It's three panels. First panel's recap what happened yesterday.
Yep.
Second panel is move forward. And then the third panel is cliffhanger for tomorrow.
And the thing is,
so the only progress is that middle panel.
And the cliffhanger for tomorrow, it's not even. It's like, will I open the door? And it's like, oh, it's my neighbor, and that's tomorrow.
Yeah.
Do I have the moral fiber to put these shoes on?
Can I do this day after day? Answer: yes, I did.
Can an artist consider this a career? Yes, as it turns out.
Am I really gonna bang this old broad?
Oh, Mary.
Oh, Mary, you are worth my apartment.
My love and
3G.
Attention.
3G. Pump.
I will sally forth because rose is rose.
Oh, my name isn't Rex Morgan.
For better or for worse, I will bang you peanuts. Garfield.
Newspaper.
Newspaper.
Don't, all right. Don't make me Andy Cap your ass.
Oh.
There goes the clean tag again.
I know, I'm sorry.
Nah, it's fine.
No, it's perfectly fine.
So,
Beetle
so, yeah,
Bailey.
So a long-form storyline, I think the summary idea is that you have to make every installment worthwhile, and the bigger the space between installments, you have to make it so memorable that they'll want to come back between installments. But but aside from that, it's no different from writing a gag a day in the sense of the finality and the completion within that individual installment.
And I don't think you can allow yourself the luxury of saying, well, I've got my whole archives online so they can always read back. You got to give them a reason to read back first. You got to hook them, you know. And nobody's going to click that previous button or go back into your archives unless that first thing they see the first time they come to your site is really intriguing. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So what I see and sometimes hear is people getting maybe lazy or kind of resting on their laurels, and they say, "Well, I've got all my archives up there." Well, that's only half the battle. You got to get people to dive into those archives first.
Right. Well, and another topic that we've discussed before about long form, but I think is worth revisiting, is that it's not an accident, I think, that short form has really found huge success in greater numbers online than long form in comparison to long form. Because I continue to think that books and graphic novels and a collected vision of a long form story are still a more enjoyable way to read it than. And granted, this is a short form guy saying that, but Like, if I were to have to read Why the Last Man online in daily, in weekly installments, where I got to see a page every week, it would drive me nuts, you know?
Yeah.
And that's why, but that's why, though, that you see, like, you know, if you notice the New York Times article earlier this week about Diary of a Wimpy Kid and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
A lot of long form stuff, though, will start online as sort of a testing ground on route to getting a publishing contract. Because the truth of it is people want to read it in the final form. They don't want to read it in the daily or the weekly updates, you know.
I got a letter about that recently. Somebody said I couldn't figure out why I didn't like Star Slip as much as everybody else did. But then when I bought the book and read it in a sitting, it flowed together.
Mm.
So I guess I'll quit updating. That's what
I took
away from that.
Scholastic, and then you're done.
Oh, High and Lois is like a play on words, like high and lows.
Have you been mulling over that?
Yes, I just got that. Is that what that was?
You know what? And it's the funniest part of that strip. You don't even need to read them
now. I ask what you guys are talking about.
You've never heard of
High and Lois?
No. But what are you referencing, High and Lois?
We were doing all those jokes about syndicated cartoon names.
Yeah.
Oh, jeez, you're still on that.
Well, a part of my brain was, yeah. All right, next question.
All right, let's
hear. Still on Tauntaun from like
another one from the mailbag.
All right,
let's go to the voicemail.
Go to the voicemail.
All right, let's go to the voicemail. Do you want me to do the one that's flattering to you, Chris?
Yes.
Okay.
Why?
Sure. Hi there. My name's Ben. I'm the creator of Jump Leads, which is over at jump-leads.com. Firstly, I just wanted to add something. You guys said in the last podcast about advertising. I usually advertise on a couple of other sci-fi comedy webcomics, including Starslip. And I find that when I do, I tend to get more hits than I would advertising on, say, Pierce Logic or Comicspedia. In fact, Starslip is still one of my top referrers at the moment, although that's probably because of the Ultraverse War, which is, by the way, fantastic. Anyway, question time. My question is about print editions. Now, when you guys put out print editions, when you put them together, how much extra content do you think is enough? Jajar, the artist for Jump Leads, he sent me some fantastic concept art for the comic, and I made the decision to only include 2 pages of character-based concept art and hold the rest back for future print stuff, assuming I do any. Is that a good idea, do you think, or am I just being a bit of a git to my fan base? Thanks for your time. Take it easy.
That is a good question.
Bit of a git.
And a good person.
And a great accent.
This actually, Scott, you convinced me when I was putting together Starslip Volume 1 that I should do less. Because in the other 2 books that I printed through Lulu, I was trying to pull together as much extra content as I possibly could. And I was busting my Dave Kellett to come up with material for
busting my Dave Kellett.
I didn't want to say ass. So, but you said the point of the book is not to reach is to play to your audience, but to be as broad as possible.
Yeah.
And to them, the material itself is new, so you don't need to put a ton of extra goodies in there. Because to the wide audience, they are not even familiar with it yet.
It's okay to repackage it, yeah.
Exactly. It's okay to repackage.
You might want to put 1 or 2 things in, but you don't have to do it for the sake of if there's no new content in here, no one will buy it.
There's no reason in printing.
Yes, there's no reason in making.
No, I wanted to have like, you know, I was like, oh, I don't have 20 pages of new
content. You were like
content.
Making maps and
yeah, I was doing entire I wrote a thesis. There's a play
true.
In there.
I remember that, though. You really were busting your Dave Kellett to get all that stuff.
See you later.
See you later.
Bye, everybody.
Bye, everybody. So, no, you...
There's probably some ratio of, like, for every 60 pages of book you do, maybe do 1 page of, or, you know, I don't know, 80 pages.
I mean, I don't see why you shouldn't put it in. I mean, if you got it, put it in. But you don't have to bust your hump to make new stuff.
Well, the thing is, he said he's got it. But I would recommend to him, go ahead and put 3 pages or in your book. But then hold back if you've got 10. Don't dump them in.
Yeah.
You know, it's better to use less than more. And then if you want to put those in something else later, then good. And if you never use them, fine. You'll find something to do with them.
So to answer his question, no. He would not be a git to his readers to hold some back.
Brad, you had a unique approach where you were rearranging your panels.
Yeah, my idea of doing the extra thing was to take the entire format and instead of doing it as a comic strip, just taking individual panels and laying out a graphic novel. Which
are you doing that?
Am I doing what?
It's just your sound was clipping.
We're losing you, Brad. Hold on.
I was getting one heck of an echo, or at least I was. Can you still hear me now?
Now you're better.
Okay. Yeah, it wasn't anything I was doing over here.
No. But you were like,
I haven't even taken a sip of wine in the last 10 minutes.
It sounded like it, though.
It sounded like you were just reeling around the room back and forth.
Well, what I like to do.
Brad's entered a temporal vortex.
New content, old content. It doesn't matter. You're going to fail, just like me.
All of a sudden, in Brad's living room were three different Picards from various timelines going, wait, we've got to get back to Q.
Poor me. Poor me.
Poor me. Pour me another drink.
Pour me another drink.
Well, no, just to wrap up, what I try to do with my books is instead of doing the usual comic strip collection, I take the individual panels and I put them all together into a graphic novel. And since I do a storyline-driven work, it all reads continuously from cover to cover. And that's kind of the extra that I do. And I don't really do anything beyond that. And I think maybe something that we need to remember when we're putting these books together is that extras are just that. They're extras. Your work has value, and collecting it in a print edition has value enough to be bought. Anything you do extra beyond that, it should be considered icing on the cake. And it's nice to have icing on the cake. But if you put together a print edition that just collects your comic, that has enough worth to get your fans to buy it.
You know what? And can I take a different tact on that? Is that look at it from like a marketer's point of view. And from when I was used to work at Mattel, one of the things that we would add into a toy or a feature or a product is just enough so that you can advertise that fact. So what I'm saying here is in a book, put in extra content just enough so that you can say, plus extra content you won't find online and feel honest about it. You know, don't just put a page in. But if you do it with a good conscience and put somewhere between 2 and 6 pages of extra content in, great. Then you can advertise that fact for that weird 10% of your populace that always says, I don't want to buy a book. I can see everything for free online. You know, and they sound like a weird 13-year-old kid, by the way. So just look at it. A lot of times in your business, you have to look at it from a marketer's point of view. It's what can I do so that I can make statement X and with a clean conscience? And if putting 3 pages of extra content allows you to say in your advertising for the book, plus stuff you'll never see online, then great, do that.
Right. I mean, back when I was having my books published by Plan 9 Publishing, that's one thing that they always kind of strongly suggested was that you do a 6-page story at the end that was never before seen anywhere else. And they would get a color position for it and so forth. And you'd always be able to say, you know, you get the collection plus a special story never before seen anywhere else. And that was a nice little marketing thing. It didn't take a whole long time to do a 6-page story.
I forgot about them. Are they still around?
They're still around, yeah.
Plan 9 Publishing. Good gracious. That seems like ages ago. It seems like a lifetime ago.
I know. Isn't it funny? I mean, that was only 7 years ago, 6-7 years ago.
Aboo. Yeah, they're still publishing all of Bill Holbrook's books.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Ew. Hobnob Inn. My God.
Toy Trunk Railroad? Wow, I remember all these from the late 90s.
Late 80s.
Wait, they were publishing Kudzu books?
Yeah. He had a deal with Dave Marlette before he died, I believe. He was a really big fan of Dave's.
And they had Jane's World, too.
And they were doing that.
And Robot Man.
Jane's World, is Paige Braddock self-publishing now?
Yeah.
Yes.
They might have some of the earlier Jane's book, but I'm not. Oh, to be honest, yeah, long ago kind of lost track.
You're right, Brad. It is the first very early one. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
Plan 9 is like an archive of webcomics past.
Look, Ebenezer, gaze upon the Christmas past.
There's our Christmas theme. Webcomics. We should have done a Christmas theme. Webcomics past, present, and future.
They're still selling Greystone Inn and goats books too.
Mm-hmm. Huh.
Oh my God, Lily Wong! I forgot about Lily Wong. Oh, those were the days of webcomics.
Posting. I never read Lily
what
Wong.
What a wonderful time.
Right? It was about an expatriate who lived in Hong Kong and married a
oh,
girl.
Oh, I remember. This is the guy that got in trouble with the Chinese government.
Did he?
Yeah, but this was a long time ago. This was when
Larry
this was Fain. when Hong Kong got transferred from British control to Chinese control.
Mm-hmm. I seem to remember that too, Dave.
Boy, that's going way back in the Wayback Machine. Anyway, let's go on to a question, one more, and we'll wrap it up for the night. What do you say, gents?
Let's do it.
Good deal.
All righty.
Okay. I've got one from the mailbag if we want to do that.
Let's do it. That's an all Brad question hour. I love it.
All right, this one says, my name's Dave Bishop, and I draw life on the fourth floor at fourthfloorcomics.comicgenesis.com.
Woof.
Got some dots.
Whew. And fourth is spelled out. It's not the number or anything. Fourth Floor Comics.
Let me introduce you to my friend GoDaddy.
and Dave, let me introduce you to a little concept called editing. This is a long one, so I'm going to try to just hit the high notes here. Actually, I'm gonna really deep six you here. Here's the question: how cartoony is too cartoony? He's talking about drawing styles and when how to make your drawing style fit your writing. And he's saying, is it possible to get too cartoony? Not only in your drawing style, but also in how you treat laws of physics, like having an anvil drop on someone's head and so forth. So, when have you crossed the line? In cartooniness.
That is an interesting question. So the idea of like the old Friz Freleng kind of cartooniness, is that the idea?
He kind of talks about both, not only art style, but also, you know, if somebody gets injured, should they stay injured for the next couple of strips until they heal?
Let me take a stab at that one. I think that for the context of being cartoony, not necessarily in art, but in the style, like the writing style, I think that being too cartoony could happen if you are developing some plot point or some seriousness or some weight, and then you end up discarding it for, you know, an anvil fell on his head, you know, and he's fine. Like that wouldn't fit in an otherwise... you know what I mean? If you're trying to build tension and then you ditch out to do some slapstick a la Warner Brothers.
Right.
And then you make that a plot point. I don't know that works anymore.
Yeah.
It's a cheat. It would feel cheap anyway.
I think a lot of...
Oh, go ahead.
Jeez. I'm going to hate listening to that.
I love how when present Scott alerts future Scott that he's going to hate that.
Scott, future Scott, it's okay.
Future Scott, half awake in bed, listening on your iPod. First of all, hand out of your pants, young man. Second of all, you're going to hate this part.
Man, too much information.
But
I was going to say, if you go too cartoony, if you're cartoony all the time and that's part of the continuity, it's fine. But if it's not, and then you go cartoony every once in a while, every time you do that, you're essentially breaking the fourth wall.
Well, let me say something too, Scott. You do that. You have cartoony stuff.
Yeah.
You'll have Brent's head get cut off for the sake of a joke.
Not so much anymore.
Not so much anymore, but occasionally. And that was welcomed. But when you did the strip about Brent and Jay talking about having a daughter, and he was imagining his daughter.
Yeah.
And if at some point Brent had the word or the balloon, the thought bubble is up there, and he's thinking about himself, and then the thought Brent looks down and goes, "Wait a minute, that's me down there dreaming. I've got an idea." And he takes a saw and he cuts the barrier of the thought bubble, and the daughter falls into real Brent's lap. So now Brent has a daughter now, right?
Yeah.
That would be
no
garbage.
Yeah.
Because you've wrecked a serious exploration.
I've done references to it where I think it would work whichever way you decide to read it. Like one time Brent got hurt and he said, "I'm really hurt because I've walked off panel. When I came back in, I'm still damaged."
Yeah.
You know, but someone could say that and it would be funny because it's almost a pop culture reference as opposed to him breaking the fourth wall. It kind of works both ways. I don't know.
Well, see, the reverse of that would be Brent's been really hurt, and then for the sake of him having to get something done for the plot, he walks off panel, comes back, and he's healed.
Yeah.
Then you've wasted everybody's time.
Yeah.
Oh, he was.
Well, let me walk off panel real quick. All right, better.
Right. But if it's a comic strip that's cartoony and a lot of fun, I don't know that you can be too cartoony there.
No.
Why would you worry about it? What about art, though?
I think there's a symbiosis to it, don't you think? Like you can't draw some super real, hyper realistic thing and then have cartoony things happen, or at least that to me would seem, because there's an implied agreement between creator and reader when there's hyper realism. You know that what goes on in the strip is going to be action or adventure or at least take place within the bounds of human reality, whereas when you're drawing like Dilbert or Garfield or with the Warner Brothers cartoons, there's at least a subjective clue that what you're going to get might not be reality.
And I think it goes beyond symbiosis. I think it goes beyond what you're talking about there, Dave. And
have another drink.
I like how you
have another drink.
That's great. I think it avoids the that thing you were talking about.
That's all, folks.
I think it goes beyond that, and that is, it would be difficult to draw really good humor in a hyper realistic style. You know, sometimes you need a little bit of that cartooniness to help communicate that humor or communicate some of those humorous things that are happening. Sometimes you need some good old-fashioned bug eyes. Sometimes you need, you know, someone's eye, you know, head spinning around, something like that. And right. And to do that in a hyper-realistic fashion just isn't going to be so well suited for that. So I think you've got to – you're kind of – there's a reason – that this cartoony style has developed through the years in art, and that is that it really does a good job of communicating your story. And I think you've got to have the art fit the story, unless, like we've discussed before, you're trying to do this ironic thing where you're, you know, it's like, hey, isn't this great? I'm doing a humor strip in a serious fashion, and that in turn only becomes interesting in its irony.
Has anybody done that? Does anyone have a hyper-real humor strip? I can't think of one. I can think of the opposite. I can think of strips with almost no art in it.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
But you can do whatever
figures.
You want there.
You know, yeah. I was thinking about that one alternative strip that you see in alternative newspapers quite a bit. Is it Tom Tomorrow?
Are you talking about Red Meat?
No, well, that's another good
Red
example.
Meat and Tom Tomorrow. There's, and it's not necessarily hyper realistic, but it's very, you know,
clip arty realistic.
Yeah,
yeah.
There used to be. Did you ever see the Chris Baldwin who does Little D? Do you remember his strip Bruno?
Yeah,
that was hyper real. Well,
no, it was.
It was more. Well,
I guess in a way, Malky's Wonder Mark is on some level. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, in that it's that same kind of idea of the very, very stiff, very realistic art and the very funny stuff.
I think as a creator, you just have to be very aware of the immediate initial 10-second read that your style presents to a reader. And just know your level of writing to overcome and fight against that immediate read just has to be of a certain level. Like if you draw a super cartoony strip, but you want to present, you know, all the best writings of Goethe put into comic form, well, then know that your writing has to be great in order to overcome your style, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe even impossibly great. It might not ever work.
Meanwhile, I'm slowly shoving my great works of Goethe back in my drawer. I'm not.
You're just trying to float that out there.
That was my way of testing the waters.
But that could work, right?
I would also like to suggest that a combination works. In other words, you can have hyper-realistic characters coexisting with cartoony characters, and that helps. Yes. A good example is Liberty Meadows.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Because he has a very traditional hyper-real illustration style that melds with the cute animals, and it works.
Yeah.
Well, now, because since you've already got those two things kind of mingling with each other, every now and again, one of his human characters would react, and he would go into a cartoon. It would be drawn in a very cartoony fashion.
Yeah.
You know, so I remember specifically panels where, you know, the guy would get bug eyes or something like that out of a reaction, and it's absolutely acceptable because, hey, there's these animals flying around in the strip anyway. You know, it's not that out of place.
Yeah, Scott, that's a great mention, actually, because I had completely forgotten about that. And there's so many different styles of cartooning where that's used. We've talked about it before. Like, manga does that in close-ups versus far action shots. Tauntaun did that. We've talked about that before. Ren and Stimpy does that all the time. So that's actually a great thing to mention.
Well, not only that, take a look at sometimes how differently men and women are drawn in the same strip.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, it's, you know, men will always have the big noses and everything, and women are always drawn, you know, in this very, very narrow kind of attractiveness, unless they're the mother or the, you know, the ugly friend or something like that, you know?
You know, without making this too pretentious, it's sort of exactly like what Shakespeare used to do with 20 serious characters and then the one goofball that would come out and sort of lighten the mood every 20 minutes, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But we have to be in on that joke, essentially, because if you, in other words, if you're doing a kind of a realistic strip and then you jump out to cartoony goings on like Liberty Meadows, we're in on that those are cartoon animals and they are living in a, and the people look pretty real, but they can always go back out and it's humor strip. But if you just do it because you feel like it's a good storytelling device, even though it doesn't fit with your work, then that seems like you have made a miscalculation, you know? It has to be intentional.
I like how politely you frame that. Like, and that seems like you might have made a miscalculation rather than saying, like, did it wrong.
Well, you know what I'm saying. All right, we'll talk about Shakespeare some more, Dave.
I will go quiet now.
Listen, guys, if you take anything away from this podcast, it should be this. Don't undeniably suck.
And hey, before we forget it, because I want to circle back around on this, fourthfloorcomicsgenesis.com, for everybody that's on Drunk Duck or Comics Genesis or anything else, $9 will get you an automatic redirect at GoDaddy.com or any one of the other services.
Is everybody drinking?
Take a one. Yeah. Did I become Captain Slurry there all of a sudden? No, what
Go
I'm saying
Daddy.
Is that you could tell based on the reaction that all four of us had to that name being read out that that's going to be a very hard name to market to as the years go on. So buy yourself an auto redirect and market using that.
Absolutely. As a matter of fact, would be willing to bet. Oh, I'm not it coming up. I was going to say I'd be willing to bet it's available.
Fourthfloorcomics.com is available. I already checked, Brad.
Oh, see there, Dave. You got a little bit of time before someone snaps it up underneath you.
You know what, Brad? Right.
And I'm a jerk. I've already bought it during the podcast. I'm like, if you want it, it's $300.
Wait a minute, Dave. It is bought. Let me do a who is here. what the heck? Small Fish Publishing.
Hey, interesting. Interesting.
What a weird coincidence,
huh?
You know what? We are coming around the clock here, but let's do a real quick, since this is going to be our holiday podcast. Any thoughts on publishing comics during the holidays in terms of?
Don't do it.
In terms of theme, or even how to get it done during this time of year.
I used to have a policy of ignore holidays. Just roll on through. If you want to read Valentine's Day jokes, you can read them anywhere else. But if you want to rest, you can come here.
If you want Valentine's Day joke, go to No Shoes for Tuesday.
Right, exactly.
Oh, I'm sorry.
It's
no.
Valentine's
go to
Day.
www.comicspace.genesis/615?20.
It's like a prodigy.
No
address.
Underscore
in there
shoes tilde.
Then log in.
Right, then log in.
Now in the menu system.
Answer the riddle of the Sphinx, and you will see the Valentine's joke.
Unscramble the visual code that no computer can read and only humans can read. Enter in the 6 digits that you see.
Right.
The answer is man. The answer is man for the riddle of the Sphinx, just in case you guys are wondering.
You know, Chris, I had the same idea, although mine was kind of practical. My strip runs in newspapers on a little bit of a delay. So I could never do holiday-related things because if I do, I've got to hold them and try to get them so that they run at the right time and stuff like that.
Right.
But I did I really had like a week's worth of like Christmas-related things that I really wanted to put into strip form, And I did it for the first time this year, did like a Christmas week. And I'm really glad I did it. You know, it's going to cause me trouble down the road. But there's another thing there, and that is that everybody's, at least it's been my experience, everybody's traffic really is going to dip over the next 2 weeks between Christmas and New Year's. And how do you deal with that?
Well, I think, Brad, your wine tells us the best way to do it.
I just punch through. I mean, I don't stop creating, or I don't like, well, now it's Christmas, so it's time for my crap jokes. Although in the past I have done that. Like, usually if you go through the archives, you can see, like, on Christmas Day, it's usually like, oh, Merry Christmas, Scratch has got Kirby up in a tree, wink, wonk, and it's like one picture, but
right,
I'm not doing that this year.
It's funny. Please don't go through my archives, because I bet every single Christmas day of mine is like that.
Happy holidays from the Sheldon crew.
Merry Christmas, everybody, from one Arthur drawn in the corner of a single panel strip. But I, you know what, I'll be honest. I tend to go probably sappier than the other three of you. But then again, I'm already a little sappier than you guys. So I tend to do a sort of a sweeter Christmassy storyline around Christmas.
That's fair.
That's
nothing
nice
from any of you. You all
I did.
Like,
hey, listen, you know me. I did a big Christmas storyline, Kringus, and this one actually that I'm doing now technically is Christmas involved. So,
kinda.
Do what you love. What do I care? I want to go home. It's Christmas.
Let's go home. I'm done.
Okay, with us tonight, Dave Kellett, Hey-O Pancakes, Brad Wigwam, Butter, Chris Straub, Comics, and me. All right, thanks to WebComics Weekly. Call 214-717-5487. Have a Merry Christmas. Buy our book in January.
All content in this podcast is expressively owned by Half Pixel. Any use outside of that must be obtained with a written permission.
From Major League Baseball.
People are writing into Major League Baseball, the guy like in their licensing office. Like, what? I have no... Yeah, fine, use it. I don't care.
I want to play the podcast with my friends at a barbecue. Is this okay?
Well, we did have one person asking if they could put content from our podcast on their site.
No.
And of course, link back. And I wrote him back and I said, if you want to put a link up to Webcomics Weekly, that's great. But you can't use our content on your site and then point back. With or without the link, it's still stealing our content. So yeah. I thought we need to start putting a little legal disclaimer at the end of these things.
You can tell Murdoch where he can shove it, Brad. That's what I said. You're not getting our content.
I want you guys working for me.
If only I could do an Australian accent, I would have done Murdoch, but I can't do an Australian accent.
Pretend he's from the Midwest.
I can do a Midwest. all right, everybody.
All right, guys.
Hey, great thanks. Hey, Merry Christmas, you guys. Honestly, goodness, it's been a great year, and best wishes for health and happiness in 2008 to each and every darn one of you.
Absolutely.
Oh, listen to that.
Gosh, wow. Thanks, whatever, Tiny Tim. Shove it. Weren't you the one bitching about this running long? Can you let us go, Brad?
Yes.
I
got to go.
Every time we wrap it up, Brad's coming back and he's like, before we go, guys, I want to read a passage from the Bible. Ephesians 12, I think, sums up the Christmas story best. Share not the cheesecake and...
No, Beatitudes. Do the Beatitudes.
Beatitudes, all right.
But then it's 20 minutes of him flipping, looking for the Beatitudes. Oh, God.
Harbor not homosexuals into your domicile during the solstice. Oh, wait, I'm reading something completely
different.
You're
reading from the pagan.
I'm reading from the Promise Keepers. All right, everyone go home. You've been cleared Theta Level 7.
We're
cleared OT. Right. Clear. Click.